walk across the courtyard towards the library. I can hear the insects buzzing the leaves beneath my feet.
It's May, spring is here, and the Kodiak Public Library Association is back with another episode of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales. Tonight, we're going to focus on gardening and love of gardening. We've got a wonderful show for you. Marian Owen is going to join us in the studio tonight to talk a little bit about her article that she does for the Kodiak Daily Mirror, as well as the book she co-authored a number of years ago, Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. That's definitely something we want to be reading this time of year to get us excited for the gardening season that is upon us. Marian Owen will actually be at the Kodiak Public Library on May 17th. There's going to be a free screening of the movie Forks Over Knives, and a Q&A is going to follow. Marian's going to be there to answer some questions you have. If you haven't seen the movie Forks Over Knives, it's pretty interesting. It'll definitely be a fun event, and it's a great opportunity to get out and get to know Marian. She's a wonderful person and an active member of the community. She's got a lot going on, which you will learn about if you tune into the show. And of course, you can always ask her if you're going to the screening. That's Wednesday, May 17th at 6:30 p.m., Forks Over Knives. It's a movie about a whole food plant-based diet and the potential benefits to it, and of course maybe drawbacks to some other diet options that we Americans partake of. So if it's interesting to you, you should definitely check it out. And regardless, you should stay tuned for the interview I have with Marian Owen, because we're not actually going to be talking about that. We're going to be focusing a lot more on her gardening tips and tricks and ways that you can grow your own whole foods, and also talking a little bit about her writing career and all that she's learned in her decades in the industry. Later on our show, Katie Baxter joins us for Lively Live Chats. She's sat down and, again, focusing on our gardening, she's looked at the SLED database and gone back to look at some old pictures of Kodiak gardening in the good old days. So, history buffs out there, stay tuned. Katie's got a wonderful story and a resource. If you don't know about the SLED database, definitely stay tuned and learn more about that. It's a resource you always have access to by visiting your Kodiak Public Library, and so we definitely want to share that with you. To break away from the gardening theme for a tiny moment, because it's May, I have to remind everybody that Crab Fest season is coming, and as usual, the Kodiak Public Library Association is having its annual Crab Fest book sale. In preparation for the Crab Fest book sale, we welcome your donations. Throughout the year you can make them, but especially now we love them. You can donate books at Cost Savers always, and right now also please drop off your books at the Kodiak Island Brewery. If you're stopping by to have a beer, maybe donate a book or two for us at our book sale. We'll make sure that gets turned right around and is available for you to purchase. The Crab Fest book sale is happening on the 26th, 27th, and 28th. On the 26th, Friday, the first day of our sale, we've got a new thing we're trying this year, where Kodiak Public Library Association members get to come at noon and start looking for their books. If you're not a KPLA member, for you, the sale will start at 1 p.m. It runs from either 12 or 1 o'clock until 8 p.m. on that Friday night, and then on Saturday, we have it going from 12 to 5, and on Sunday, it's going on from 1 to 3. We have also on Sunday, the Kodiak Public Library is providing music. The Dixieland girls are going to be there. So if you want to come for the last day of the sale, try to see if there's any books you might have missed and hear some music while you do so, Sunday is the day to do that. But I encourage you definitely to show up for the book sale first thing. We're always very busy when the book sale first opens, so those KPLA members, remember, you can come at noon and get a head start on finding the best books we have. If you want the head start but you're not a KPLA member, you can do that by visiting our website, www.kodiakpubliclibraryassociation.org, and pay through PayPal, or just bring a few extra dollars and sign up to become a member right when you come to the Crab Fest book sale. It's a great opportunity. You will also then be subscribed to our newsletter to find out about other great events that the Kodiak Public Library Association is doing. At our Crab Fest book sale, we have, as always, our great prices, which is $2 for a hardback, $1 for a paperback, $0.25 for a kid's book, We also do daily themes, so there'll be a particular genre every day that'll be on sale. It's a great opportunity to stock up for your summer reading list. Please come to the Kodiak Crabfest book sale at the Kodiak Public Library Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of Crabfest. And if you can think of it before then, empty out some room on your bookshelf and donate those books to us by dropping them off at Cost Savers or the Kodiak Island Brewery. Now I want to jump right in with our special guest, Marian Owen, and find out a little bit more about her. So we're going to head on over to our Beyond the Cover segment here on Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales. So, Marian, you've made quite a name for yourself here in Kodiak over the years. You co-authored the book Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul in 2001, and for years you've written a gardening segment in the Kodiak Daily Mirror. You are well known for your photography, and you also do the Galley Gourmet dinner cruises and wildlife viewing tours. On top of all of that, next week we're going to see you at the Kodiak Public Library for the film screening of Forks Over Knives and a Q&A afterwards. You have definitely made a name for yourself here. But I found in my research that you actually moved here in 1984 from your previous work on research vessels and ships. Can you talk to us a bit about what made you decide to transition from sea-based work to land-based work, and what made you decide to make Kodiak your home?
Oh, that's really good questions, because it's just sort of accidental in a way. It happened maybe, let's see, that would be 1984 when I moved here. So maybe 1982, 83. I was up here working on a tugboat. It was the fuel barge that would pick up fuel up in Nikiski, up in Cook Inlet, and then deliver fuel out the chain or to Valdez, which seems odd, but you would do that, or visit the drill rigs that were in Cook Inlet. And we were here tied up at the Petromarine Services dock delivering fuel. And I had to go into town to get a doctor's appointment, you know, and take a look at something on my hand. And I was waiting for the taxi to grab me or somebody give me a ride. And I was standing right there at the rail looking at the Russian church and the scenery. And I thought, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I'm just tired of missing the seasons. I'm tired of being gone for several months at a time and coming back to a whole new season like I missed something. You know, and I thought to myself, what do I want to do? You know, you have a conversation with yourself. We do this a lot, all of us, right? I had a conversation with myself. Self, Marian, what do you want to do? I think I want to do photography and gardening. Bingo, just like that, in my head. Never mind that I'd never really done much of either one, except photography. I was given a Brownie camera when I was a little girl, that classic thing. I even have a picture of me in a polka dot dress, don't tell anybody, and I'm holding a little Brownie Instamatic type camera. But when I was at sea, I used photography as a way to describe to people in a visual form and in a written form, because I would write long letters, what it was like to live on a ship at sea with no sight of land. There you are. Water spouts, gale warnings, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I would take pictures, develop the film in the lab on the ship. And, you know, the ship moves back and forth, so you really don't have to tilt the trays. It does it for you. And that's really how I started with writing and with photography. Now, when I moved to Kodiak, I decided that's what I wanted to do for a living, you know. And I contacted Alaska Magazine. Just like that, cold call. Don't do that, right? You're not supposed to do that. The books tell you, don't do that. Don't call the editor and just start talking. And I got right to the point. I says, why doesn't Alaska Magazine ever cover Kodiak or Kodiak Island? The response was, well, we never really receive anything about Kodiak. So that was my in. That was my foot in the door. So the first thing I covered was, let's see, that would be kind of in the late, mid-80s. And there were still Soviet ships visiting Kodiak. I mean, it was 89, right, when the Soviet Union fell, so to speak. So this would be, you know, early, mid-80s. And they would come to port and tie up and either refuel or reprovision. And the crew got to get off onto the beach. And I remember seeing the big red hammer and sickle on the stack. And I go, whoa, this is serious. And at the end of the run, the ladder way, or the, you know, the where they get off the ship, the party member, the Communist Party member, would stand right there by the rail, and he would check people on and off. So when someone would go shopping, the guys would come back to the ship and they'd have everything inspected and they go back on board. Me, I wanted to know and was going to write about what were they buying. They were buying junk food and blue jeans and then Sony Walkmans. So that's what I wrote about. It was just a little picture and just three paragraphs. And that started nearly a 15-year relationship with Alaska Magazine. And I still submit images. They still contact me for pictures.
And so has your photography and your writing always gone hand in hand? You have pictures to go with a lot of your articles and blog posts as well?
That's what I try to do. At first, you know, I really just wanted to take pictures. That's kind of fun, right? But I learned quickly that an editor or a publisher, they love a package. If you can illustrate your work or write well about your photos, you're more likely to get published. And I also work through a stock photo agency. So it isn't just about writing. Many of my images, people don't realize, but many of my images are sold off island. They might show up in an encyclopedia or a billboard in Japan or a public relations effort in California about salmon, you know, all kinds of things. And so they get a commission and I get a check. And so it isn't just the prints you see around town. It's stock photography sales, too.
So your writing started kind of as an addendum to the pictures that you were taking. But now you've really become well known for your gardening writing. Actually, when I interviewed Patty Holmes and Kate Lowen from the Kodiak Garden Club last month, they specifically mentioned that you're a great resource for all things gardening, but specifically for composting. So why do you think composting is important? And do you have any resources or tips for people looking to experiment with composting themselves?
Composting is very important. And this doesn't mean just for Kodiak Island. Composting and being able to compost well in your location is important wherever you live in the world. Because in my opinion, there's no such thing as perfect soil. Or if there is perfect soil, once you start gardening in it and, you know, removing nutrients and so on, it's tired. You need to replenish it. And composting is the number one way to do that. It's the solution to all garden problems. And I kid you not, because here in Kodiak, for example, our soil is fairly acidic and nutrient poor, and it is cool. It doesn't drain very well. However, if you add some organic material, amazing. It's like, voila, you have air and you have water to flow, which 50% of soil is highways in the form of water and air, for nutrients to flow to the plants, to the root tips, just to move. And having compost is like having the answers to all your problems here.
So how did you learn about it? Did you get out books or did you have a guru that you learned from?
I went to the library. You know, this is pre-internet. So I went to the library, and our local library has a fabulous collection of gardening books. Fabulous. And I just started learning how to, or researching, composting. Because the Extension Service here, the Cooperative Extension Service in the state of Alaska, the only bulletin they had on composting said it took 5 years. Well, I wasn't going to wait 5 years for my first radish or head of lettuce, right? So I just did research, and I learned that there was a method that a man had developed actually near India. And it was a method, a hot composting method, where if you combine the right amounts of nutrients, like nitrogen and carbon, and it would heat up, and in 3 weeks you'd have finished compost that you could apply to your garden. And I was like, I thought I'd learned the ninth wonder of the world.
Yeah, that is pretty impressive. I can't imagine composting in 3 weeks. So you've obviously written articles then sharing this information with
right.
others.
Right, so I did. As a matter of fact, when I made my first compost pile, I had to go out like treasure hunting. So I was out treasure hunting looking for like a list, going to the store. See, I need grass clippings and leaves and kelp. So I got all of these ingredients together, kind of like creating something in your kitchen. And I built the 3x3x3 compost heap. And I went, okay, this is the middle of the winter. And if this works now, I can do this anytime. So after about 5 days, I went out the corner of the yard. I jammed my pitchfork into the compost pile and lifted it up. And there was steam rising out of it. And you just couldn't believe how ecstatic I was. Carhartt's pink scarf, and I'm smiling ear to ear. It was just fabulous.
So steam is definitely a good sign for
it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. The Kodiak Daily Mirror. You write your Garden Gate article. You've written it for a long time now, a lot of years. For our listeners that might be interested in writing for a local paper, can you talk about how you first got started with them?
I started 1,097 columns ago. So that's every week. So you can do the math, you know, divide by 52. And again, it was another cold call. I saw a need because I was teaching myself how to garden. The only experience I really had with gardening was in Seattle, Tacoma area. And as a child, I was given a broomstick and I went outside in the winter and I would tap the bamboo that was sagging way down under the load of snow.
Uh-huh.
Bing! And they'd pop up, or debudding rhododendrons, or if I was lucky, maybe pick a plum. And that was it. That's it. Weeding. So if I wanted to learn about it, maybe there are other people in the community that wanted to learn about gardening. Because when I first got here, I mean, God bless them, but the garden club pretty much talked about flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only eat a few flowers. And I knew that my yard then was just lawn, and I couldn't really eat lawn. So I built raised beds, and I took pictures. And then I approached the Mirror, the editor then, and I said, well, what do you think about maybe a gardening column of some sort? And she said, well, sure, why not? And that's really how it started. So I try to write, and this is important for anybody that's trying to learn, you know, how to get into that kind of business or maybe contribute in some way, is for print. Just practice. Just try it. And try to not talk over people's heads. If it's a how-to, keep it where your audience follows what's being described, right? Give them an on-ramp so they know what's coming. It's like radio, you know? You need to give people an on-ramp. This is what we're going to talk about. We talked about it. And this is what we talked about. Yeah.
Right. So since you've gone a lot of years now writing one every week, how's your process for that? Do you have a certain time of day that you'll write, or a certain time of the week that you write? Do you get right down to a deadline every time, or do you actually have some articles that you have saved up? So if you want to go out of town or take a weekend off, you can just throw an article to the Mirror.
Well, I'd say see all of the above. There are certain topics I need to write about. Those are evergreen. Transplanting seedlings, how to make compost, things that come up every year, at the same time every year. But I try and add a different spin to it. As far as deadlines go, I know I have to have my column in to the Mirror noon on Sunday. That's it. So everything kind of revolves around it. Sometimes I'll be at the grocery store on Monday or Tuesday, and people will ask me questions. They'll have gardening questions. And after a while, I go, oh, I should write about that one. Or I put together a Q&A column. Or somebody will send me an email. Marin, my what's it in my kitchen is, you know, I've got funny spots on it. What is it? Well, if I don't know, I'm going to look it up because I'm going to learn something. And then on the other hand, then it might be Saturday where I finally sit down and really write it. But for me to actually start an article, period, I can get little doodads written down, but I need to get that first sentence and that first paragraph nailed, at least pretty much nailed. And then I feel like an flow after that.
Mm-hmm. Writing the article, you kind of just casually do it whenever you are inspired, but it's the day before that article is due where you're sitting down and making sure you've got the whole thing hammered out.
The whole thing hammered out. And never, ever just send it in after you've gotten down to the end. Always go through and edit it. And the best thing for me to do is when I think it's done, I will actually put it aside, let it rest, and come back to it the next day. Because you're always going to find something. On the other hand, you can tweak something until the cows come home. It's like working in the darkroom. You can work on a black and white print forever and ever, but at some point you need to say, stop, that's it, done. Because, you know, you can get into that perfection mode, and then you start looking at words like the, and they're not spelled right, so you know you've worked on it too long. Now, writing for the internet, writing on my blog, that's a completely different style of writing. It's very conversational. Rules of writing kind of go out the window. But I will say, though, even writing for the printed page is also morphing. Writing for the internet or writing for a blog, they're kind of coming together a little bit as styles.
Right, because on your website, I noticed that you had a newsletter, the Upbeat Gardener, that went on for quite a long time. And now you've transitioned to your blog. And for those of you interested, you can find Marian Owen's blog at www.marianowen.wordpress.com. So talk to me a little bit about how writing has changed since you've started, since you've been in this decades now. How has that, the transition, how was the transition from going to writing a newsletter to going to writing a blog? And how have you noticed that language has changed?
Language has certainly changed. I don't know if it's for the better or for worse or whatever. When I first posted my website, I had a website, by the way, for an organic fertilizer that I had patented called Plant Tea. So it was a fertilizer in a tea bag. And planttea.com, I had, 3 years running of number one on Google for organic fertilizer and some other topics. But there's no way I could accomplish that now, even if I still was making Plant Tea, because it's so competitive. When I first started writing for the internet, you know, it was full sentences. Nobody really knew what they were doing. It was full sentences, like taking an article and then just copying and pasting it on the internet. You don't do that anymore. You'll lose your reader. You've got seconds to grab their attention and then, you know, go from there. And, you know, pictures and quotes and breaking up the text. I think it's not so much that we're writing differently. We are assimilating information differently. So many of us, we're all kind of ADD in our own way. And you can see it in teaching methods. You can see it in how people read and get their information. And we're becoming a very impatient species, actually, if you will. We're becoming very impatient. We want it now. That's changed.
Right. I've actually spoken to a number of writers before, and they've said with texting, it has become like we are more casual in how we engage with other people. And like you said, more rushed. There's more shortening of everything.
We're very impatient.
Mm-hmm. And you found that your blog works best now when you really focus on paring it down and keeping it.
I do pare it down, but I also just posted a very, very long piece. It was essentially my keynote address that I presented at the Master Gardener Conference 2 weeks ago, the State Master Gardener Conference in Palmer. And a lot of people said, could you send me your PowerPoint presentation? Well, that doesn't really work. I mean, it's a 100 meg file, and compressing a PowerPoint is not warm and fuzzy to do. So instead, I took my text, but my conversational text, and I interspersed it with the images that I used in my PowerPoint. So it's a quick read, but you can just go through it. And I provided hyperlinks so people can click on the topics.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that would be really helpful. So that's a lot. So that's where you really put every sentence and every word on there.
In that case, I did. Mm-hmm. I just wrote a piece about spring cleaning in the home and garden that I just posted today. And it's very conversational. You know, it's one-word sentences and goofy things. But, you know, I remember when I first, it would be 1995 or 96, which was just the birth of the www dot anything, because prior to that, it was just about information, mm-hmm. looking up information. And I had my planttea.com website up there. And in addition to just having articles, because it was all about content, if you could have good content or articles, you got good rating on Google. And that still remains. However, I put about maybe a page worth of about Marian. And I said that I lived in Kodiak Island, and I do this and that, and I love to hike, and so on. Well, I actually got an email from a lady in the Midwest, and she says, you should never provide any kind of personal information on your website. I thought, really? She says, because people will come get you, or they'll write you letters, or they'll, you know, call you on the phone. Or, I mean, obviously, she's based from fear. Uh-huh. But, you know, then it was pretty much, it's just black or white, and you didn't talk about personal things at all.
Right.
It's completely different now, of course.
Yeah, definitely mm-hmm. it is. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit and talk about the book that you co-wrote. In 2001, with five other authors, you made chicken soup for the gardener's soul. And I want to ask you, what inspired you to make that book?
My mom was sick. And she was dying of pancreatic cancer. And I told my brother and sister, who were with her a lot down in Seattle area, I said, if you ever want to, need to, feel inspired to, just call me on the phone. So think about that one. And then I was out in the garden one day, and I was tending my garden. And I was kind of thinking back to when my mom and I, when I was a child, she would take me to museums and art galleries. And she's the one that got me really curious about the natural world. She would help me identify plants. So we went on a hike, say, in Mount Rainier National Park. I love to run and skip and hop and go up and down trails and everything. But I really liked to find plants that maybe mom didn't know. So I would come back a little handful of leaves or berries or something. And I remember, too, that in my forestry class in high school, I didn't have to take the final exam because I was able to identify more tree species than anybody. And that's thanks to mom.
Wow.
So I remember one catalog mom and I would go through, and it was prints. It was art prints and Japanese art prints, which for some reason I love Japanese woodblock prints. I think maybe in a past life I lived in Japan or something. Anyway, we picked out a print that was a very pastoral farm scene, if you will. There was a hut of some sort and then a field, maybe it was rice growing or something. And the lower left-hand corner was this clump of blooming yellow irises. And we ordered and received that print. And I just thought it was lovely. Well, I was out in the garden, you know, fast forward to living in Kodiak, and my mom is dying of pancreatic cancer, and I'm out in my garden and the phone rings. And I was actually weeding around this clump of yellow irises. So I had an armful as I'm coming in the door, and it was pre-cell phone, so I had to pick up the phone, like, you know, holding this. And my sister says, Marion, I think mom's about to pass. And I'm going to put the phone by her head. And you can talk to her because she's pretty, she can talk now. And so I told mom that I'd always loved her and I really appreciated all that she had shown me through the years. And then she said to me, she says, sweetie, I love you and I always love you. And that's the last thing that she said to me. And so I hung up the phone and went, you know, kind of did circles in the living room. And something prompted me to go into my bedroom and pull the box out from underneath the bed. And I did. And it was a box of newspaper clippings and things I'd saved and certificates and stuff over the years. And I lifted up the lid and I started going through it. And there was the print with the yellow irises. And, I just sort of lost it. But I wrote about that whole scenario. And I published it in the Mirror. And then I thought, oh, you know, I just had this flash. Maybe this would be a good topic to present to Jack Canfield, who I had met a couple years before at a business conference. Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen are the creators of the original Chicken Soup for the Gardener. Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen are the originators of the first Chicken Soup for the Soul books, that New York Times bestselling, right? And so I just thought, I wonder if Jack and Mark have a Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. Because I'm sure there's, because I'm sure there are inspirational stories out there about gardening. So I took that idea in my head and I ran up to my friend's house, Carol Sturgilewski, who was living right up Rezanov, knocked on her door and she opens the door and I said, Carol, what do you think of this idea? Chicken soup for the gardener's soul. I couldn't talk fast enough. And she looks at me and she kind of cocks her head and she says, sure, Marion, sounds great. Let's do it. And what I didn't know was she had no idea what I was talking about. She was not familiar with the series at all. But that's how it all started. And we contacted Jack's office and asked, what are the requirements to put a proposal together? And they said, well, get some stories, write some stories, tell us why you think it would be a good selling book. And we did. And we even packaged it in a fluffy, you know, those padded envelopes you can get from the post office. And they had bright pansies or something all over them. And that's what we mailed in. And they put us together with, there's five of us with three other co-authors. And it worked out great because they were all gardeners in their own right. And they lived all around the United States, like this circle. One in North Carolina and one in California, one in Iowa, and the two of us in Alaska. And so we were under deadline. Duh. I mean, everybody's got a deadline to work with. And Carol and I would work on stories. Now, these stories didn't just arrive by email. When Jack and Mark Victor Hansen said, nodded yes to Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul, their office puts out, I don't know where, these feelers saying, we're looking for stories. And they got stories on paper napkins and, you know, yellow ruled paper and you name it. And then all of us co-authors got bundles of these stories. And so we had to read through every one of them and kind of score them. And then we culled from there the first 300 that were the best and then 150. And then we had to start editing the good ones. And that meant working with time zones. So Carol and I in Alaska would work on them. And then at night, we would email them to Pat in North Carolina because he would then get up in the morning and bingo, there'd be 50 stories for him to edit by email. And then he would do the same thing. And so it just went around the whole country. That's what we did.
And then for the final production of it and the layout and stuff, what was, because you're all over the country, how did you make that happen?
We all bought plane tickets. We all bought plane tickets and we flew to Jack's ranch in Santa Barbara, California. And we spent many hours in his office laying out. I mean, it was big, giant table. I'll never forget. It was like a conference table at the UN, I swear. And we're all looking at the stories and moving them around in chapters. We put little quotes with each one. We had cartoons that goes with it, some stories. And we kind of laid it out like you would a National Geographic article where you put text and photos and you rearrange stuff. And that's how we did it.
Wow.
It was a great cooperative effort.
Yeah. I'm noticing a theme here. You cold called the Mirror, you cold called the Alaska paper, and you called Jack up out of the blue and said, how about this Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul book? And I know that they say not to do it, but it seems like it's been really successful for you. So would you tell young people to just put their foot out there and try?
Boy, I didn't know I was such a contrarian. I would say yes. Don't be afraid of trying. Because I remember Jack Canfield telling me that when he and Mark were proposing or looking for a publisher, they were turned down dozens and dozens, if not hundreds of times. It was the last publisher that they approached at a book fair that said, sure, we'll try it. So don't ever give up. I mean, if you feel in your heart of hearts that your idea or, you know, the gist of an idea is not only good, but might help others, which I think is really important, projects and so on that are to be beneficial to the greatest number of people will fly. If it's not just for selfish reasons. If it's for selfish reasons, I don't know. So I would say, yes, try. But at the same time, have your speech or act or whatever you want to call it together. You don't want to just squishy, tentatively try it. You want to really go there like you're selling something that's going to save the world, so to speak. But don't be discouraged if you're turned down. You know, people will come, say, to my house with Girl Scout cookies. And they're passionate about it. But honestly, I don't eat Girl Scout cookies. But I don't want them to be discouraged because it's all about selling the idea and encouraging people and being inspired and inspiring others. So absolutely try it.
That's great advice. I like that. So I have a little question. I mentioned your blog earlier, www.marianowen.wordpress.com, or you can Google the name of your blog, which I'm probably going to mispronounce. Is it Lagnap?
close. Lagniap, and that's kind of how it's pronounced. Lagniap, I hope, because it's a Cajun word, and it means a little bit extra. So let's say that I'm a vendor at a market, and I sell potatoes. And you come to me with your sack and say, I want 2 dozen potatoes, and I'm going to make a big pot of potato leek soup. So I'm counting out potatoes, and I get to 2 dozen, but I put another one on top. Or maybe I give you a yam or something. That's called lagniap.
Oh.
So I want to think that people are going to get a little bit extra. For example, I wrote about, my last posting was about spring cleaning tips for the home and garden. But it's not just about how to clean a house or weed your garden. I always provide a little bit extra, like an aha. Tom Hanks said that whenever he does a presentation or meets with people, he thinks of 3 E's: to educate, entertain, and enlighten. Because you don't want to just pump people with facts and figures. You want people to go away with something new and sort of a, spiritual, whatever you want to call it. It's just a little bit, you know?
Uh-huh. Okay, so speaking of a little bit extra, that made me wonder if your Galley Gourmet Dinner Cruises is another project that you have in the fire. Did that come about because you had a little bit extra in your garden?
A little bit extra in the garden. We do serve 500 or so salads out of our raised beds every summer.
Wow.
We do probably 100 to 120 dinner cruises or day trips where we're feeding people. So it's kind of a nice way to, first of all, tell people that we can grow more than just, you know, snowballs in Alaska. Yeah, it's really fun because oftentimes I will present the salad for the evening and I'll say, okay, you guys, you've got 21 things from the garden in here. And they all get wide-eyed, really? You know? And the dinner cruises was sort of an accident, too. It all started with 9/11. Again, 2001. It must have been a pivotal year for me. When the towers fell, you know, many people were affected, of course, including the restaurants and the restaurant workers up on top. Well, the local chef, French chef here, Joël Chenet, who used to have Mill Bay Coffee, wanted to put together a fundraiser. So he approached Marty, my husband, and said, I'm putting together a dinner to raise money for people, surviving families. Would you be willing to offer your boat so that I could cook a dinner and serve it on the boat, 6 people, and that could be, you know, a nice ticket item? Well, it did raise maybe, you know, several thousand dollars. It was great. And when the weather got better, May or June, and they went out and did the dinner cruise, after the trip was all done, their boats all tied up, Joël turns to Marty and says, oh, this would be a great idea. Marion loves to cook, and I could help her with some menu ideas, and this could be a business for you. Well, that was 15 years ago, so now we're celebrating 15 years of doing dinner cruises.
Yeah, you really have an amazing way of just stumbling into fantastic choices.
I guess there are no accidents, though.
Right.
I really believe that. We might not understand why something happens, good, bad, or otherwise, but there are no accidents.
Mm-hmm. One last thing. May 17th, like I said, you're going to be at the Kodiak Public Library at 6:30. There's a screening of the movie Forks Over Knives and a Q&A afterwards with you. So tell me why you're so passionate about this movie, why you think it's important to share, and why you think that there should be a discussion afterwards about it.
I am very passionate about healthy eating, and it started because, in a sense, both my parents died early deaths from what I now understand to be preventable diseases. And, you know, you might think, well, your mom died of pancreatic cancer. Well, she might not have had she been eating well, lots of fruits and vegetables and fiber and so on. And there was an incident between Marty and I, and I'll talk about it the night of, but it just became extremely important for me as a writer and as a cook and one that does all the cooking in our household to provide the healthiest food possible. 1 in 4 people in the United States dies of heart disease. That's over 600,000 people. And heart disease is preventable. In countries where there is no meat and dairy products in the diet, heart disease is unknown. And then you look at us in the United States with the most advanced medical technology in the world. And yet so many people die of heart disease or complications from diabetes and stroke and so on. Something's broken. And so when I watched Forks Over Knives, it made it clear that our diet based on meat, dairy, refined oils, well, the standard American diet, if you will, is killing us. It's killing us. You eat like a king, you'll die like a king. And so I just wanted to provide this for the community as a screening so that people can make up their own choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I also watched the movie. I think it's fantastic. I encourage everybody to come out on May 17th, check out this movie, and have a chance to chat a little bit more with Marian Owen. She's wonderful to talk to. I want to thank you, Marian, for taking the time out of your busy schedule to come in and talk to me. We really appreciate having you on Dog-Eared Reads.
Oh, my pleasure. And keep reading.
Thank you. All right. Next up, I want to let you know what's happening at the Kodiak Public Library this month. Like we already mentioned, May 17th, Marian Owen will be at the Kodiak Public Library for that free screening of the movie Forks Over Knives. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. on Wednesday, May 17th. And if you need to know any more information, you're welcome to contact Marian Owen directly about that. Her phone number is 486-5079. What else do we have going on at the library this month? Well, we've got a library event that is not actually happening at the library. This one is happening at the Kodiak Island Brewery instead, so you can have a beer while you enjoy this one. It is a graphic novel book club. It's happening three times over the next few months. It starts on May 13th, and then again, it's happening June 24th and July 29th. This is a great opportunity for those people interested in graphic novels to get out there. It's a genre that's really growing right now. I think there's a lot of interest in graphic novels, and a lot of big authors are turning to graphic novels as another format for getting their words out there. So 4 p.m. on May 13th, June 24th, and June 29th, you can get together and chat with some other people that like graphic novels. Maybe bring one of your favorites in to share with people. They might actually mention this at the book club, but the graphic novel March by John Lewis, Andrew Iden, and Nate Powell in 2013 actually won recognition from the National Book Award Committee. So graphic novels really have become an integral part of our culture. Not to mention they're fun to read and there's great pictures. So get excited about graphic novels and show up and share your enthusiasm. We also have another event happening at the Kodiak Senior Center. Lots of things going on, not at the library this month, but the Kodiak Senior Center is having a classic cinema day on Monday, May 15th from 1 to 3 p.m. They're featuring the movie Sabrina. That sure is a classic. So if you have time, 1 to 3 p.m. on May 15th and want to get out and see a movie over at the Senior Center, that's a fun thing to do. Also, on May 16th, we have Rachel Putnam joining us at the Kodiak Public Library for Job Search Help. She's going to be doing a little workshop on how to use the Alexis system. It's happening from 2 p.m. to 3:30. She's actually going to be coming back again on May 23rd to do another workshop, this time on resume writing. So if you need it, this could be really helpful for you in getting a leg up on getting your resume out there and maybe getting the job of your dreams. Be sure to show up for that. And continuing in that theme of workshops that'll help you get ahead technology-wise, Deb Rhodes is going to be joining us at the Kodiak Public Library on May 31st for a Facebook workshop. Now, I know some of us use Facebook a lot and we're probably very comfortable with it, but I bet there's always some new things you can learn. And maybe there's some people in your family that don't use Facebook and want to. It's a great resource, especially for connecting with family and friends. So maybe you've got some older people in your house that aren't as comfortable on Facebook. This would be a great opportunity for them to get out and learn more. There's some general outline things happening. She's going to talk to people about getting a profile picture up, updating your information. Then really importantly, privacy controls. That's something that's always changing at Facebook, and it's really important to have your privacy settings set correctly. So she'll definitely help out with that. And then, of course, more simple things like friend activity, tagging friends, birthdays, reviewing timelines, statuses, posting photos, all of that. Sharing, oh, that's another thing with sharing your posts, making sure that you have the right security settings so that you're sharing it with who you want to be sharing with and maybe not sharing it with the entire internet world. So 6:30 on May 31st, come on down to the Kodiak Public Library with Deb Rhodes and learn how to be a little bit more comfortable on Facebook. I guess the only other big thing happening this month is our Crabfest book sale. I know I've mentioned it already, so I'll just briefly mention it again. It's happening Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of Crabfest up at the Kodiak Public Library in the multipurpose room. On Friday, it's going to start at 12 p.m. if you are a KPLA member, and if you're not, it's going to start at 1 p.m. If you want to come down at 12 o'clock, become a member, and then get in and get ahead on looking at the books, this is a great opportunity to renew your membership. It's also happening on Saturday from 12 to 5 and Sunday from 1 to 3. And also on Sunday, the Kodiak Public Library is presenting the Dixieland Jazz Band, so there will be some music to listen to while you're perusing the last few hours of the book sale. Definitely come down and visit us there. We want to see you. This is our biggest event of the year. We're very excited for it. Then, of course, Monday being Memorial Day, the library is closed. So I think that sums up what's happening at the library for the month of May. We've got a lot going on. We want to see you out at some of these events, maybe see you out at our Crabfest book sale. Now, I want to get back to gardening, so let's find out what Katie Baxter over at the Kodiak Public Library has going on for Lively Live Chat.
Hi, this is Katie with Lively Live Chat for the Dog-Eared Reads program produced by Kodiak Public Library Association. In this month of May, we're all focused on our gardens, and during this gray, rainy season that we've had, we're eagerly awaiting spring to burst forth. We're anticipating the smells of the soil, the clean soil, and those fresh buds and those vegetables that will soon make us all happy. And I know we're focusing a lot on our current gardens around Kodiak. We're so lucky. We've got the community garden over at Larch Street. We have the beautiful gardens that Mid Short inspires many of us to begin, thanks to the help she's given us with our winter seeds. And then we have the work of Marion Owen as she describes for us tips and strategies for making the most of our garden beds. But that got me thinking about gardens of days gone by in Kodiak, and how would I be able to find out about some of those past gardens? And I mean going back to the early 1900s. This got me started because I was reading a wonderful essay by Angelie Grantham on the Alaska Historical Society page about the early practices of gardening on a Fognak. So that made me think about some of the resources at the library that could help some of you who are curious about gardens of days gone by. And I'm talking about some of the resource and research material. So when I go to the Kodiak Public Library website, and you can access our website from home on your mobile device, from your personal computer, if you go to www.city.kodiak.ak.us, you can click the useful links button on that landing page, and from there take a look at those SLED databases that you hear about. SLED is the acronym for the Statewide Library Electronic Doorway. This is a site of information resources for, about, and by Alaskans. It's put together thanks to the funding from the Alaska State Library. The Alaska State Library works hard to get us grant monies from the Institute of Museum and Library Services and other statewide sources. And so SLED is an array, or a garden, if you will, of wonderful resources. And the one I want to talk about today is the one that's called Alaska's Digital Archives. So you'll see that button, and if you hear a click, it's because I'm actually doing the search for you now, and you can join along with me if you're at home. And if you click on that Alaska Digital Archives site, you can enter the phrase Kodiak Gardens, can you hear me clicking away, in that search bar. And if you look, there are several collections that you can add or remove as you do your search. All of those collections are clicked in that left-hand margin for me. And what I love is seeing the thumbnail photographs, photos from Kodiak related to agriculture or to gardens. And I can see the first black and white photo entitled Kelp for the Gardens, originally dated from 1919, and if you click on that photo, you'll get a story of sorts,
because there is a description, and we're told that this black and white photograph is a view of a man at the oars of a wooden skiff, and it's loaded with kelp off of Kodiak Island. We get the scientific name of the kelp, Alaria fistulosa, and it's being brought up for fertilizer for the potato gardens at Kodiak. And this photo was taken during the National Geographic Society expedition on the way to Katmai area in 1919. So I wanted to point out this source because sometimes we have students in high school or at our community college or people around town preparing for local presentations and talks, and they want to get some original photographs dating back to this time period, as well as brief information related to ways of life. And gardening and harvesting of kelp were certainly part of the lifestyle here in Kodiak. And if you continue scrolling down this particular entry, you'll see a link at the very bottom saying related materials. And we have a finding aid from the archives of the University of Anchorage in Alaska. And it's a guide to the National Geographic Society expedition's photographs. And I wanted to point that out to the listening audience because there may be some other photographs listed in this index that would be of interest to you. There's more photographs listed of sea kelp attached to rock, moss growing on the rocks, various scenery and settings. There's information regarding the expedition. Several of you may know this. The eruption covered the town of Kodiak with almost 1 foot of ash, and the explosion was heard as far away as Juneau, which was a 750-mile distance. So this is information that you're able to get in this brief caption to the photograph. And you learn that the expedition was under the direction of Robert F. Griggs, who published a book and several articles on the expedition. And if you're a hunter of information, there's a clue, folks. You have the name of an author, a researcher, and you can plug his name into our catalog and the catalog of other Alaskan libraries to find the location of his actual study and his books. And we can either order them here for our collection at the Kodiak Public Library, or we're happy to request those for you through our interlibrary loan service. So this one curious photograph has led me to different avenues of information. Then I have fun looking at the rest of these photographs. I see in 1915, we have United States Marshal Armstrong, and there's a picture of his turnip that he raised in his garden at Kodiak. It would be great fun to compare his turnip, which looks pretty large to me, to some of the ones that you are all growing thanks to your winter seeds here in Kodiak, thanks to the tips from our Kitchen Gardener series over the past year or so. In addition, I can see that there were cabbages in the Baptist Orphanage Garden on Wood Island. So again, a piece of Kodiak history gleaned from a digital photograph on the Alaska Digital Archive site. And these cabbages, as I read the collection, it's a beautiful black and white photo, lush, several cabbages. And again, this photograph was taken in 1915 on that same expedition and by Robert Griggs on the way to Katmai area. So it's kind of a story within a story, and I'm learning a lot about Kodiak history just from my interest in gardens. Then I see another photo of, getting back to kelp, kelp as fertilizer. I get a sense to see that the use of kelp was very important to our natives here. They've applied the ribbon kelp that Alaria fistulosa comes up again. and using this particular kelp as a fertilizer to potato gardens happened for over half a century. And these same garden plots continue to produce good crops without any intermission thanks to the fertilizer. So that is a story of success of a Kodiak garden crop dating back to 1915, 1919, and I'm really looking forward to seeing the success of the garden crops here in Kodiak in 2017 and viewing the collection of this summer's photographs. And you'll be able to please take your photographs, and young people in particular will be invited to submit their photographs in July to our Around Kodiak annual photograph exhibit that's part of our summer reading program. So happy gardening, everyone, and please let us know if we can help you locate any useful resources to plan your garden, expand your garden, amend your soil, identify those mushrooms, and all other good things that our Kodiak gardeners are doing. Thanks so much from Lively Live Chat at Kodiak Public Library. And thanks, as always, to Kodiak Public Library Association for its support of all things library.
Oh, thank you, Katie. And speaking of support, it is budget time on the federal level, on the state level, and always that's a time that libraries are thinking about support. So I've got a little legislative update for you. Obviously, there's a lot going on in Juneau right now when people are discussing budget considerations and various revenue measures. So there's not a lot of talk about library needs or deeper cuts right now. But it's something you want to be paying attention to because we don't want there to be an unexpected hit later on at the final hours of this budget discussion. So a little update right now. There is something called IMLS that is scheduled to be cut if they do make the decision to zero out the funding to the Institute of Museum and Library Services this year. So ACLA, the Alaska Library Association, is a great web page that you can look for updates and find out what's going on so you understand the issue and really know what to say when you're reaching out to your senators to encourage them to help save IMLS funding. What is IMLS, you say? Well, there's a lot that it covers, but some of the biggest ones are the Alaska Library Network, the Overdrive Collection, all of our books that we're reading digitally, the tech support, the database group contacts, all of that could be cut if IMLS is cut. Also, things like school library consultants that's provided by IMLS. One quarter of the funding for live homework help is provided through IMLS, and $300,000 for the SLED database is also funded by IMLS. And Katie was just talking about the SLED database. So there's other things. Battle of the Books, IMLS provides a grant for that every year. They also fund the Native American Basic Library grants. And above and beyond grants, it's actually some of the books you're seeing at the library are provided by IMLS funding, such as the Talking Book Center for people that are visually impaired, or the Ready to Read Resource Center, where we receive bilingual books, flashcards, and parenting resources. There's also the Alaska Mail Services that provides interlibrary loans for remote locations. These are things that really do affect Kodiak. These are things we really use here. So if you're in favor of this funding, please reach out, contact your senators, Murkowski and Sullivan, and encourage them to keep fighting for IMLS funding. And if you're wanting to know more or you want more details about this, ACLA, the Alaska Library Association, is a great resource. That is www.akla.org. And with that, I think we're going to wrap up tonight's episode of Dog-Eared Reads, Fetching Books and Tales by the KPLA. I'm Athenia Large, and until next month, I want to wish you happy reading.
The simplest of pleasures, the world at its base.